Good morning, everyone. My name is Kate Ryan, and welcome to Life After iPhone. It's an impressive turnout, I must say, after the 50...
Yeah,
certainly. thanks very much for coming. We realise that this is impressive turnout for last day and after 57 party choices from last night, so we appreciate the fact that you've come. My name's Kate Ryan. I'm living in Sydney, Australia at the moment, and I have a digital strategy and content management background, most recently with Avenue A Razorfish in New York. And I'd like to also introduce the other people on our panel. To my left, Kyle Outlaw. He is a senior user experience information architect at Avenue A Razorfish in New York City. Karen Krujanski is a senior UX engineer at Tell Me Microsoft in the Bay Area. Scott Jensen is a mobile UI manager at Google. And Loic Mestracci is director of marketing at Groove Mobile in LA. So I'd like to welcome them all and thank them for being here. Just to recap on what we're here for, obviously, you know, the topic is a large one, and we're not here to, I guess, talk about product roadmaps. It's more an overall symbolic discussion about, you know, iPhone and what it does mean in terms of the landscape, particularly in the US and the UK at the moment, and the knock-on effect and how user experience may or may not, you know, change with this roadmap marker that is iPhone. And with that in mind, I mean, that's the discussion that we want to have here. I'd love to see a show of hands of people that are UX professionals, designers in the audience. Great. Marketing-related people working within marketing areas, product development, technical. Okay, it's a real smattering. And are there any of our Apple brethren with us today? Yay, thanks.
Welcome.
That's great. So obviously none of us are from Apple. So, you know, as I said, it's a symbolic discussion more than, you know, product related. So, but we really would like to, you know, start with some fun facts. And of course the Apple fun facts are, you know, particularly interesting over the last year. I'm not sure if all of you know this, but iPhone represents about 200 patent filings by Apple this year or last year. The official figures are 150 million spent on the iPhone development. Apple's negotiation officially took around a year with AT&T. The deal, as it stands, is that AT&T gets 5 years exclusivity in the US, for and that relates to 10% sales. Apple built models of human heads in order to test radiation emissions for the iPhone. SKD will allow developers to do voice over IP applications that run on Wi-Fi, so that's hot off the presses. And I'm sure a lot of you are aware from last week that Kleiner Perkins have just announced a $100 million iFund for developing on the iPhone. So what I'd like to do is hand over to each of our panellists to introduce themselves. We'll go into some questions, and then, of course, questions, but also comments from the audience. You know, we don't want to set ourselves up as experts, of course, on this subject, and we know that there's probably a wealth of knowledge and thought from the audience. So we'll be handing over to you in the later stages of the hour. So, Karen.
Good morning. I've been designing voice user interfaces for about 12 years. And when I explain to people what I do, I say something like, when you call 411 or when you call your bank or an airline and you get a speech recognition system, and they stop me there and they say, oh, I hate those things. I yell, operator, operator, until I get one. And I say, well, I'm a designer who tries to make those better for you. And things over time have been getting better for design in voice for voice user interfaces. But more importantly than that, we're taking it one step further. And what we're seeing now is using the right medium for input and output for the task at hand. So for example, we're moving more towards voice in when I'm searching for something in a large space. So for example, say a business near you, it's much easier to say Indian restaurant than to type it with my fingers. But then when I get a full list back, I get data out, I can scroll through a whole list of Indian restaurants. So we're moving much more towards voice in, data out. And the iPhone is also pushing things forward with things like the new interaction modes and gestures that you can use to interact with the iPhone. The other thing that I just want to bring to the table is just saying mobile isn't good enough anymore. Is the user walking? Is it noisy? Are their eyes available? Are they driving? So mobile isn't good enough anymore. If we go to the next slide, we're going to talk about some things today. Integration of applications into the car and what that means. What is the context of where people are using these devices? When I'm driving, scrolling through a list of Indian restaurants isn't the right method. At that point, maybe I want to hear the list of Indian restaurants because there's a certain amount of cognitive load as I'm driving to hear these kinds of things. And we're going to talk a little bit today about where the iPhone is doing some good things and some things that can be improved. And we're going to look to see how the design space, the user experience discipline, is working to make sure we're designing the right design for the right experiences.
Thanks, Karen. Now I'd like to introduce Scott Jensen from Google.
Hello. I'd like to focus a little bit on how the iPhone has kind of changed the way we're working. I mean, previously, Google kind of believed in, and still does, this whole idea about, browser for all, everything runs in one browser. And in my 3 years at Google, I have spent an extremely unhealthy amount of time making Google.com work on crap browsers. And it's really been a huge chunk of my life trying to figure out, okay, it supports these three CSS tags, but not these two, and it only supports these, so we've got these huge databases to take care of this problem. And the iPhone really changes things quite a bit. It actually is a proper WebKit browser. And it doesn't just do ECMAScript, it does real JavaScript. And not just JavaScript, it actually supports the DOM. I mean, you can make divs invisible. You can do animation. You can do caching. So it really has fundamentally changed the way we're kind of approaching mobile applications from the browser perspective. Now, clearly the SDK can change that, and there's a lot more to discuss about that. But if you want to focus on the browser point of view, it really has changed quite a bit, and that's quite reassuring because there's going to be lots of people that are going to be kind of coming up with WebKit-style browsers shortly, and that's, I think, a very positive effect. The other issue is, though, that I feel is kind of a little bit... Well, actually, I'll say that for a little bit later in comments. I just wanted to say, basically, though, that I think that the iPhone is going to be a very big change to the way we think about mobile phones, and I'm looking forward to what's going to happen, especially how it's going to kind of kick the rest of the industry in the rear a little bit and kind of like raise their game a little bit, because it really is, we're seeing significantly higher usage with the iPhone than other phones, and I'd like to see this continue. That's it for now.
Hi, good morning. The iPhone changed our business. GroupMobile, basically what we do at GroupMobile is we've been for the last 4 years, we've been pioneering mobile music distribution, or music distribution over cell phones. And before the iPhone went on, when we described the business, which basically you can purchase a song like you do on iTunes, but you can do it on your phone and download directly on your phone. In the past, people will say, oh, really? You can do that like on the PC? And we'll say yes. And now they say, oh, you can do that like on the iPhone. So it's definitely, in terms of, I would agree with Scott, in terms of public awareness, the iPhone has a huge impact on what you can do on the phone besides communication, like phone calls and SMS. We launched the first music store in the United States in 2005 with Sprint, and we also power a major customer in Great Britain, which is Three. And the UI is very different, and the needs are very different. In Europe, the carriers are looking more for a web-based type of storefront, I would say, where in the US, our customers are looking more for a client that you download, where the client combines the shopping experience as well as the playback experience. Some of the challenges we have in our company, I would say user experience challenge, are really the fact that we feature a massive catalog of assets. We, in general, any music store we deploy has over 2 million tracks, 30,000 ringtones and real tones, and a significant amount of music videos. And you have a limited real estate. The screen size is limited. You don't have a PC, and how, you know, you have to have a secret sauce to how to basically display all this information in a cohesive manner. The interactivity is very important. When I started at Groove Mobile 3.5 years ago, we basically could do one thing at a time. Either you download or listen to music. Now we can download, in the same time browse the music store and play back and share with friends. So that's something that's changing as well in the space. And the iPhone is clearly a multitask device per se. I mentioned the enhanced specification. And one of the last challenges is, of course, the bandwidth and the 3G penetration. We always say that the US is behind compared to other territories. And this is not necessarily true. I said that 3G is available almost everywhere. It's just, you know, you don't have the handset accessibility is not that widespread. A handset either expensive or the battery life is a challenge. But those are kind of the challenges or the challenges in distributing music on cell phones.
Okay, my name is Kyle Outlaw, and I'm a senior information architect at Avenue A Razorfish. I'm lucky enough to spend about 60% of my time on working on rich internet applications for Fortune 500 companies, but also spend some time doing R&D for mobile. How many people were at the web agency There Will Be Blood seminar yesterday? Okay. I thought that was a very interesting panel. I think one of the contributing factors to the bloodletting will be the iPhone, personally. I see the iPhone as a symbol of an age of disruptive mobility, and that will involve, I think, Google Android very much, VoIP over web, and some other interesting developments. But in terms of my own personal take on this from a professional standpoint, I think that it's going to be disruptive within user experience as well. And we're also starting to see that within Razorfish. And I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. Traditionally, if you look at this top row, these are examples of the kind of deliverables that clients have been expecting from us. The typical wireframe, sitemap, and task flow, in my opinion, is really rapidly becoming extinct. What we're starting to see within user experience, particularly at Razorfish, is a requirement among user experience professionals to be more hands-on in experimentation. So this kind of brings a question of what is the future of the agency? Will it be part agency, part lab? Personally, I can envision that a future agency might be a little bit like MIT Media Lab And also MIT actually has its own ad lab, I believe. So these are things that I think agencies are really going to have to look at in terms of where they go in the future. A couple products, just to give you an idea of how Razorfish is approaching innovation. SmartPox, which was developed in San Francisco with Garrick and his team. This is a prototypical application. It was not built for a specific client. It was really a proof of concept, and it's been a very successful proof of concept. You can get more details about this at smartpox.com, but basically it's an application that reads and creates two-dimensional barcodes to be read on cell phones. More recently, Newsbreaker was created. Newsbreaker was created in New York, and this allows users to contribute news stories via mobile, so they can send photos and text. And my own personal pet project is Food Ninja. Food Ninja is a smart agent that helps you find restaurants, and this was developed specifically with the iPhone in mind. The main point just being learning how to design for the iPhone. So I'm not really pitching these products. I'm just using these as an example to show how an agency will need to devote part of its time to creating products in an incubator-type environment.
Okay. I've been thinking, you know, a lot about this panel because we submitted quite a while ago the idea for it, obviously when iPhone first came to market. And personally for me, you know, I think that the titles become a little bit more how I stopped worrying and learnt to love the iPhone. So with that in mind, you know, I have conflicting views, but I'd like to hear from the panel. So if we start with Loic, I'd love to hear from all of you what you love about the iPhone and what you love a little less.
And I'm the first one to start. Lovely. So the first thing I like about the iPhone, there are a lot of things I like about the iPhone, but I'm not going to try to talk. We'll have different opinion. I think what was remarkable about the iPhone is reintroduced a lot of way to interact the device, like the scrolling and the touchpad, but it worked. It was not an afterthought. It really worked. People typed on it, and it worked. It was reactive. And I thought it was amazing because you have other devices like the HTC Touch, actually, where it is still challenging. Or you have other tactical devices like the Palm, you know, with the pen. That was very challenging. People will use it at the beginning for the wow factor, but they will not really use it. They will go back to the keyboard. And that's one thing that I thought was that I really liked about the iPhone, that the multi-touch thing really worked out and was a breakthrough in terms of usability. The things I do not like personally about the iPhone is it doesn't do the simple task of a phone. It's challenging. Making a phone call, sending an SMS, sending an MMS. I personally love my phone to shoot videos and send videos around. And that's something that the iPhone is not yet up to the task. It does everything else. What's multimedia, it does it phenomenal. But some of the basic phone functionalities are still have some shortcomings.
Okay, can I jump in?
Scott, please do.
I might cheat a little bit. I think there's a high level thing and a low level thing I love with the iPhone. One is just the sheer audacity of the design. It took my breath away when I first played this thing, and it doesn't have menus. You know, it doesn't have scroll bars. I mean, that just takes incredible guts to pull that kind of thing off, because so often people are just porting the web to the phone and it's got the scroll bar with the arrows and the thumb and the slider and all that kind of silliness. So it really was a fresh breakaway. Now, it's paying a price for that in some ways, because to do things you've got to like have multiple buttons on the screen, but it still was really, really trying. And I think an awful lot of the copycat products aren't going to have the guts to follow along that, you know, aggressive. They'll put a big screen on it and have it touched and say they're done, like the HTC or something. The low-level thing that I think is amazing about it is how so often I think UI is driven by mundane things that aren't sexy. The fact that it's got the SIM that's configured for unlimited data for free, I think, is unbelievably powerful. I was in a cafe with a woman, and I was playing with my phone, and she came up and said, "Oh, I just got one." And we just kind of wanted to trade stories because Apple fans do that, right? And I was telling her some of the things that she could do, and she like just clicked on the weather, and she squealed in delight, and she didn't have to configure a damn thing. She just touched weather, and it worked, right? And the maps and all that kind of stuff. And the fact that this woman could play around and not have to do anything. We found at Google that when we download Java apps to a phone, a very large percentage of the time, it never makes it for reasons that are just too numerous to go through. And that's just gone. So I think it's really easy to underestimate how powerful the free, simple, configured, working data connection is in the iPhone. The thing I don't like about it probably is probably the fact that Apple is pushing so hard that this is the web in your pocket. I mean, we've had this with WAP in 1998, and we still have it right now. I mean, this is not, you can do the web in your pocket if you have absolutely no choice. But I think what we're finding is that the industry is responding with iPhone-specific apps for your pocket, because I really don't want to read the New York Times on this thing. What I'm concerned about is it's perpetuating the myth that this is a desktop, and it's not advancing the conversation that this is mobile.
Building on what Scott and Loic said, two specific features of the iPhone. One, coming from the voice world, I'm really impressed with visual voicemail. I mean, it might be the last time you ever have to hear, you have 22 new messages when you dial in for your voicemail. Now, what if you want message number 12? How are you going to get there? And so the iPhone is really, the design has really looked at that pain point and addressed it with visual voicemail. On the other hand, just back to what Loic said, again, coming from the voice world, the iPhone is a phone. Why does it take me 5 clicks when I'm driving down the freeway to make a phone call? Why can't I just say, call mom? And so making those tasks even easier would, in that context, especially driving down the freeway, is really important. And I think iPhone can move forward and progress in making those experiences better.
As far as good things for the iPhone, I think that the iPhone really is a benchmark, a historic benchmark in mobile user experience. I think that iPhone has really shattered a myth in the industry, and I think the myth was that cell phones need to be complicated and difficult to use. So I think one of the great things about the iPhone is, like similar to what Scott was mentioning, that a kid can basically use it. A child can, you know, do simple tasks on it within seconds. In terms of bad things about the iPhone, I wonder if having the software and the hardware basically inseparable is going to be a long-term problem moving forward. And I'm also curious to get input from the audience as well as other panelists to hear their opinions on this. I'm wondering if it might be a repeat of a decade ago or longer, where the Mac clearly was the superior product, but in the end, the Windows GUI won out. So as we look at open platform and open access, I wonder if the long-term strategy may keep the iPhone as a niche player.
Apart from learning that Karen shouldn't be driving down the freeway calling her mum, I think that the theme out of that those answers was very much around mobile design, and that this is where, you know, the iPhone is the game player. So I'd really like to ask Scott about the impact specifically of mobile design from the iPhone.
Well, I touched briefly on the fact that it is enabling the capabilities of the full desktop, but I really think that you really want to rethink the whole mobile process. A theme that I go on in other talks that I give is about default thinking, how whenever something new comes along, you do what you were doing yesterday with the new technology, and you don't kind of think of new ways of doing it. So there's an awful lot of money to be made to, like, kill BlackBerry, kind of copy that model. I think the SDK is going to encourage an awful lot of, you know, handheld gaming, which again is well-known territory, lots of money there. So I think that in the short term, the iPhone is going to reinvent itself in some ways as just kind of a new BlackBerry, a new PSP, that kind of thing. But the whole reason I'm in the mobile space is because I think mobile is fundamentally different. And the challenge is going to be to kind of figure out how to break that out. What I like about the fact is that because so many things are going to be possible on the iPhone, we'll be able to fund the stupid stuff. And then people will make money on the stuff that is like boring but obvious. And then as those things come along, the cool stuff will kind of come up through the cracks. So I really expect that there will be a significant innovation by this, but it's going to come from nowhere. The lion's share is going to be done by the boring stuff.
And Loic, from your experience in Europe, who would you say, who else is really taking design seriously in this space? I mean, putting aside iPhone, who should we be looking at for leadership in this space?
Sony Ericsson has been really trying to push the envelope but in a traditional way for handset manufacturer, they're trying to come with a cool design. I think this is more the Sony aspect. That's what Sony brought to the table. And some new handset, actually, I have with me an upcoming handset from Sony Ericsson. And it's very interesting because the media player on it is a down version of the UI of the PS3. So it's interesting that it probably thought about a new UI to access media that would be workable on a device like a game console, but also down to a cell phone. Sony Ericsson is very peculiar about user interface. The work we try to do with them, it's really each button has to have its own functionality. It has to be very simple, minimum clicks. I think this is a critical aspect. Like Karen said, you know why. Why do you have to click 5 times to call mom? The minimum clicks is something that Sony Ericsson is paying attention to, having a bunch of buttons out there outside of the handset, which is kind of the opposite of the iPhone. iPhone has one button, and you have a handset manufacturers like this putting as many buttons as they can. So I think that's where I would look at. Mm-hmm.
If I just add something there, just in terms of mobile design, something that I mentioned before, which is, previously screens weren't taking advantage of voice, and voice isn't taking advantage of screens, and now we're seeing new applications that use the medium that makes the most sense. We saw some screens before that Tell Me has been working on. We're deployed now on a Helio Misto phone and Live Search for Sprint. So again, moving design forward with the best best input and output that makes sense.
Okay. So we've been talking a lot about what design is, and I guess from the handset perspective, there's a wealth of discussion there. But I'd like to ask Kyle specifically about good design for mobile. I mean, when it actually comes to the interface and you have to create a user experience on the screen, how would you define that? And, leaving aside or perhaps even thinking about the many barriers, particularly in the US market, that have to be overcome with carriers and, the various issues that we're all aware of here.
Well, I think what iPhone really did well was to basically strip the phone down to some just core essential features. I was saying before that I think the cell phone industry was really suffering from complexity in terms of device design. And I think there's a problem with so-called featureitis with cell phones, and they tend to have way more features than are actually needed. So I think what iPhone was able to do was basically strip that down to some really basic features. And ultimately, users were willing to pay a little bit more money and to have fewer features, but to have those features done very, very well. So I think Apple really, I think of Steve Jobs as kind of like the Pope of design in the fact that in the industry, I think they look to Apple in terms of a design ethic and design sensibility. So I think that's really one of the reasons why the iPhone is having so much impact, because here's someone coming in saying, you need to limit the number of features. This is how users want to interact with a phone. I just wanted to mention too a couple of phones that I think might be contenders, might be interesting to look at as well. So there's a whole range of iPhone killers. Personally, I still hold out for the Sidekick. I really like the Sidekick. The only gripe I have about it is it's a little bit too big. You know, it doesn't fit well in the pocket. But I think, personally, I like the keyboard a little bit better. And I think it's a messaging machine. And so I have great hopes for it. And now that Microsoft has bought Danger, I think, you know, it could have a real impact as well. The other interesting one that I have just demoed, but I haven't really used, is PSP Slim. And apparently they're going to put Skype on that. And that could be really interesting. And then additionally, there's a Skype phone that's being made in collaboration with Three in the UK. And I'm not sure if that one's going to be available in the US, but very interested in what's going on with cell phones in conjunction with VoIP as well.
Yeah, actually, I was just going to kind of jump in on that one a little bit. Because, I mean, I have to admit, in all fairness, that I used to work at Apple for like 8 years. So I'm technically a fanboy. But I think I want to make sure that, I don't think Kyle intended this, but I don't want this panel to be perceived as, you know, the iPhones is great. Because, you know, people are so tired of comparing the iPod, you know, all things good and holy. I think that in some senses, the iPhone has possibly gone, I know this, has gone too far in some ways. And I think we talked about this before, which was that probably the worst SMS app I've almost ever used is on the iPhone. And let's be really honest. I mean, it's not a very good SMS app, and especially if you come from an environment like Europe where SMSs are used all the time, everything from the ergonomics to the lack of being able to forward. I mean, it does a couple of cool iChat type of things, but, you know, it doesn't, in its ability to limit its features, it pays a certain price. Now, to be honest, that's why it's such a cool product, because we've, as all the designers in the room know, it's really hard to get the manager to say no, right? And iPhone has basically said no until it hurts. So I think that's an interesting question to ask, is must you have some pain points in order to achieve that kind of minimalism? So I guess my point, though, is that it doesn't come without some cost, because I think that heavy SMS users really want to throw the thing against the wall sometimes.
Tying those two points together, back to featureitis, you know, and let's stop designing for technology's sake and identify users' needs and what they want from their device. The iPhone is great for passive entertainment. If that's what I want to do, if I want to watch video on the subway, that's a great, you know, that's a great device. But when I want a device for communication, well, I might get the Sidekick. If I'm going to be SMSing 300 messages a week, that's a great device. And so I think what we need to start thinking about is, you know, what is the main goal and who is using this device? I look at the new Garmin Nuvi phone, a GPS phone. Well, that's real focused in that device. Who's going to be using that? And I think those ideas are really powerful. It's not one device for all. It's what type of person is using this? What are they going to want to do? And let's slim down the features to make those things achievable.
So at the risk of all of us ending up with more than one phone, which is what has happened, I know, when we took a quick poll on this, this panel, I'm going to ask the question that we don't have hours to discuss here, but Loic, open access, how are we going to go there? And, you know, you have 2 minutes, not 2 days.
So open access, this is, I mean, with initiatives, and I'll with initiatives like Android or the SDK, Google Android or the iPhone SDK, that's going to give, basically, it's opening the doors for designers in this room, you know, to develop applications, and they don't have to be part of a handset manufacturer to do that. So I think this is absolutely a positive aspect. I mean, look at it. IBM was the number one PC provider, but we have some phenomenal new application that came from outside of IBM, okay, like the web browser or office applications and things like that, or games. So I think it's a great opportunity. Also, the fact that, you know, you have financial people putting the money behind it, it looks like it to me. It's going to source a new
era of growth, I would say. So it's very, very positive. At the same time, the issue we have in the United States, as opposed to other territories, is that today the carriers control basically the distribution channel. And, if Verizon and or Sprint say, you know, I want to have all my phones to be UI1 or Java or my own flavor because I have a deal with Qualcomm, that's going to be challenging. And that's going to basically slow down the development of open access platforms. So
obviously we're touching on many different aspects of this discussion. And I'd like to point out at this point that we've actually set up a space online for us to continue this discussion. I mean, part of what we're trying to do here is touch on some of these ideas and, you know, start a discussion. And of course, an hour just isn't enough time for a lot of this, but and it's an ongoing discussion because it's a discovery. So the URL up here is going to be a place where we can talk further about this. And Kyle, do you want to just explain what that space is?
Yes, this is an ad hoc social network created on Ning. And we put basically just go to this URL and then you can sign in, anyone can sign in. And there's a blog and a forum. And so that's basically how we'll start out the discussion. And then if you have any questions about signing up, just see me afterwards.
Okay. So back to us. I'd really like to ask Kyle, because I know he's thinking a lot about this at the moment at Razorfish. How do you think that, you know, the need to design for mobile is changing your job or will change your job, and not necessarily just at Razorfish, but for UX professionals?
Well, I think with the PC, standards were relatively in place, I think, and this was touched upon in the mobile panel yesterday, International Devices of Mystery, but the fact that there are really no concrete standards, and things are very much in flux. And I think for that reason, I talked about the need for user experience professionals to be a little bit more hands-on, and I'm implying that there's rapid prototyping involved early and often, and I'm an advocate of an agile method as opposed to the waterfall, which has been very popular and very profitable for agencies. But I think as we go into these new areas where the standards aren't fixed, I think there's really going to be a demand for user experience professionals to get their hands dirty, and sometimes this may involve working with devices. So I think that's going to represent a major shift in our approach to work. And I'm already seeing evidence of that within the last year or so.
I think it's also it means that the UX professionals have to think a little bit more creatively about how to test applications. When we talk about context, bringing somebody into the lab and playing with a mobile device, that isn't going to get us our usability testing and making sure that what we build is usable. When we try and test things like when pairing your Bluetooth phone with your Ford Sync in the car and then making a call while you're on the freeway, you know, hands free, how do you test that? Obviously, putting participants, usability participants, and making them drive down the freeway isn't necessarily the best way to do that. So we're going to have to think creatively about testing context, testing end-to-end experiences, and not just kind of on day one, but over time, how people change in using their mobile applications on day one is going to be very different than how they use it a month later, 2 months later, 3 months later. How do we measure that, and how do we make sure we're designing the right things?
Yeah, I'd like to jump in on that too. This is going to be kind of similar to a previous comment I made, though, which is that right now this is considered to be a consumer of information, And I think that as we go forward, especially as we get better battery life and better connectivity, which we've been wanting for years and years and years, but it looks like it's starting to come, which is kind of nice, that these are going to start being producers of information much more than consumers of information. So it'll be able to record my location, I mean, in a fancy way, my heartbeat, but also kind of, you know, anything I'm doing and tracking various things. So I do feel that there's lots of very innovative things that we're going to be trying and doing in the next couple of years, especially because we do have SDKs to kind of play around with these things.
No, I have nothing else to add. It will definitely change. It will have a major impact. Reach your application, definitely. You know, tech. We're going to move from text-based to more interactive and video-based. And this device, as an example, has two cameras to do video calls, do video broadcasting. So definitely, I agree with Scott in terms of input. This is an input device, not just an output device. And you know, when you design new application, you have to take that in consideration. You know, I mean, we heard about what happened 2 days ago with Twitter. You know, people were using cell phones to do that. So.
Can I just add? I just want to add one thing. Also, I'm seeing mobile used to be seen as just one channel among many. So if you were in mobile, you were more or less specializing within the agency. So now clients are really looking for solutions that involve multi-channel. So at the same time, there seems to be a merging or a collision, rather, of PC and web. And so, I'm sorry, PC, web, and phone. And so on one level, like with the SDK, it was announced that developers will be able to do VoIP over the using the iPhone in Wi-Fi hotspots, not over AT&T, but they will be able to develop VoIP applications. Additionally, there's a company called Ribbit, which many of you are probably familiar with, that is developing a way to create widgets for having VoIP accessible on websites. So basically, you would be able to call a service center, for example, directly from a website. So we're seeing sort of an integration of phone and PC, and it's very hard to predict how that's all going to shake out. But the common theme is really a mixing of channels.
So I'd like to open up the discussion and to the floor. So if anyone has any questions or comments, please make your way to the microphone. Before that, I'd just like to ask everyone on the panel, just for personal reasons more than anything else, killer app. What is your mobile killer app, Kyle?
This is imagining no technical constraints, but what I would like to have is a luggage search application that would help me in the airport. So if I'm looking for my luggage, I can find it quickly, or I could find out right away if it's on the wrong plane and headed to another country or that sort of thing. So that's, if I could, I would love to create that kind of app for the iPhone.
Maybe more than an app is just looking at a mobile device as a shell to get my information that lives maybe in the cloud. And when I get into the car, maybe I interact with that same information in the cloud, but via my steering wheel. So it's more moving my data somewhere where I can always access it. And I decide, depending on where I am, how to access it.
I think you set me up. Yeah, because I would exactly agree that we've got, it doesn't take long to come up with lots of cool things you want to do with a phone that doesn't instantly kill the battery and all bandwidth, you know. So there's tons of ideas that are almost impossible. So my killer app would be an infinite battery and infinite bandwidth.
I agree. I use my phone a lot for music. Of course, I work for Groove. But one thing I would love is actually when, like Karen said, when I move to the car, I would like to be able to connect automatically, and now it will play out my playlist. And when I move back to the house, you know, it will transfer to my stereo. That's the kind of thing I would like to use, where it's always connected, or it can, you know, using Bluetooth or any kind of other technology.
Okay. Great. Do we have any questions from the audience?
Oh, this is really big. Hi. I work with Karen, full disclosure, but what I see with a lot of Apple devices and something that scares me in the UX discipline is that people absolutely love them and they don't criticize them. So a really good example, I voted a month ago and I voted with ClickWheel. And I don't think that's an appropriate use for the ClickWheel, but I think that the people that designed it probably thought, oh, the iPod is so usable, this will be great, and it was a disaster. And I see with the iPhone, I've got a large group of very intelligent friends, and they absolutely love their iPhones and don't ever criticize it. And I fear that it's going to make us take a step back. And I wonder if you guys have any comments on that.
I've already said my bit on that. So,
well, I could just say, in terms of developing for iPhones, I think the approach that we're taking is really more about smartphones versus more streamlined WAP phones, so that we would have basically a high end experience and a low end experience. That we're not really suggesting right now that we're specifically designing for that one platform, because I think that cuts out too many users. So,
but Chelsea, to your point, maybe one thing that we haven't mentioned here that the iPhone has done, I mean, so yes, maybe the people aren't criticizing those, you know, how to make it better. I think we've done a little bit on the panel today, but, you know, I think that the iPhone is moving design as a discussion at the executive level in some companies where that hasn't happened before. And that's really powerful at the executive level to say, what do we need to do for design in our company to make the iPhone killer, or to make the next thing that's better than the iPhone, or make something completely different? And bringing that visibility to design is really important.
Following up on a previous conversation, this actually was something Scott brought up about the iPhone being really bad at SMS. The iPhone decided to trade out SMS for what was a more rich web experience. And so for Scott and the other panelists, I was wondering what kind of impact that's going to actually have on the mobile device market because of the iPhone's market share.
So you're saying it will have an impact on SMS usage?
Because the iPhone is so bad at SMS, SMS applications are difficult for the iPhone. Mm-hmm. Because of the iPhone's penetration, what kind of impact will that have on the mobile application and device market?
I think that's very hard to say personally. I mean, I think that the iPhone will probably get better. I think the fact that this thing has every single ROM rev, it does address more of it. So just recently, it got multiple sends on SMS. I mean, Apple seems to be trying really hard to fix it. I'm uncomfortable saying that even though it's doing something wrong, it will necessarily impact the entire industry. What I see, actually, more than anything else, is the web industry, that especially the U.S. web industry that doesn't get the phone, keep saying, what's this SMS thing? Why don't we just do chat? I love that conversation, because they just don't understand why SMS is valuable versus chat and so forth. So I personally don't see it having that big of an impact, but that's just my opinion.
Well, I just wonder about the long-term viability of SMS. You know, if SMS is not a priority for the iPhone, but email clearly is. And I'm wondering if, you know, just the pay structure of SMS is going to make it extinct in favor of email on mobile devices.
But SMS is just so ubiquitous. I mean, it's the classic chicken or egg problem with any social app. The biggest problem is not getting you on it, it's getting your 100 friends on it. And since SMS, by complete luck and happenstance, happened to be built in every single phone, it's by right now kind of the de facto thing. So I think it's going to be a very long time before we replace SMS, personally.
Hi, thanks for all the comments so far. I'm wondering if you can elaborate a little more on your thoughts on both the mobile web as well as that. I mean, we lightly talked about this, about sort of like the new PC-Mac battle, having software tied to hardware. I personally see that the phone in general, all cell phones, have only really two advantages: that they're always with you and that they can be location based. So with those two advantages in mind, do you really see that there's any advantage that the phone has as a new device especially with using something like the mobile web. A lot of people say like what the iPhone's doing now with its new fund and with a new developer platform is actually taking the phone in a completely wrong direction, as opposed to the right direction of pushing more toward the mobile web and then tying maybe location-based services to the mobile browser.
Well, I will say the third thing about the phone is it's an always connected device. And this is, I think, a very, very different thing that we didn't necessarily talk about, but it's the device where you can do a lot of push. You know, we talk about the BlackBerry and say, oh, push email, it's wonderful. But actually, the first push messaging platform was SMS. You send an SMS, and you bing, it rings on your phone, and you get the SMS. So that's, I think, a big impact. Go back to the PC, you know, the PC Mac war. I mean, we didn't have to. The PC needed to have an open platform to expand and become ubiquitous. This is not true with the phone. There are about 3 billion cell phones in the world, okay, which I think it's probably 2 or 3 times as many PCs. But they all have. I mean, you probably have hundreds and hundreds of platforms. You know, I mean, just Nokia, we talk about the S40 and the S60. So far, it was not necessarily a requirement to do voice application and some basic application. Now, if you want to move more into exchanging data, exchanging files, photos, and all that, an open platform can really expand the possibility of a handset. I think that's where it's going to go, where now the handset could become actually a substitute to the PC in many ways. We've seen with the BlackBerries. I mean, I know a lot of people who use their BlackBerries more than their PC. So that's where it will have. I think my point of view is, you know, the open platform and having new softwares installed on cell phones will expand actually new kind of application, communication applications, usage of data.
And I think your point about location-based services is right on, is that more and more, I think that's where some of those killer apps are going to be, is location-aware, GPS-based phones and building services around that. So something that the PC doesn't do and that you can carry with you.
Cool. Thanks. Hi, I was curious what you all think about stylus inputs for these kind of devices. Where you see that? Do you see that's going away, or do you think that can be integrated into something like the iPhone interface, and does it have a good future? I was just curious about that, because sometimes the input, I've been using the iPhone here to take notes in all the sessions I go to, and you know, it's pretty good about, you know, you get the touch down pretty well with it, but sometimes a stylus I think might be nice. So I don't know if you all think that's a good thing to integrate into design for these kinds of devices in the future. I'm just curious.
Well, I worked at Symbian for a while. I actually was the original designer on the UIQ platform. So I have the issue for me is that it, like the Palm, it gives you a much richer granularity. You can hit more things. There's just something about it that just feels personally just extra geeky.
Yeah.
You know? And
you don't need that, Scott?
I don't need that.
Okay.
And there's something about the fact that it, I'll steal the line from Jobs. What do you do when you lose the damn thing?
Yeah.
And I'm the kind of guy that loses style all the time, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah. So I don't see, especially if you get out of that web PC desktop mindset and you start designing for the phone and you do design and you cut till it hurts, you don't need 1,000 targets on the screen. So I'm personally fine with that. I am not, by the way, a big fan though of the keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't get it to work,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
so I'm just frustrated with that. But I don't think a stylus necessarily solve that problem.
Yeah, I was just thinking more as an option to have, because there are certain times if you wanted to draw on the phone or you wanted to do something like that, it might be a nice thing to have. I mean, I agree. I lose styluses all the time, and mm-hmm. they're a pain. But there are times when it could be handy. So I'm just curious if that would be something to integrate in as an option to have for an interface. So.
As an option, sure.
I think there's an opportunity for quote-unquote iPhone killers to take into account other ways that users prefer to interact. So the touchscreen is very popular, but as you've noted, the stylus is very popular as well. I was looking at a phone, the Samsung F700, and what was interesting about that, though it didn't include a stylus, it did have a touchscreen and a standard keypad, and also a QWERTY keyboard. So it's really taking into account all the different ways, many of the different ways that users want to interact with the phone. And I think, you know, when you look at some of the things that are probably an issue with the iPhone interface, one of those will be the keyboard because it's a little takes a little bit of getting used to. And so there's also, when you look at Europe, there's you know, there's definitely a history of using keypads for interfacing with the phone. So again, I think the iPhone killers will have an opportunity to look at the different ways that people want to interact with their phone and their preferences, such as the stylus.
One thing I saw yesterday, just like how intuitive ways to want to do things with your phone. I saw that flip silent, right? A phone rings and I don't want to answer it and I flip it over and it turns the ringer off. Well, isn't that intuitive, right? I don't even have to look. I don't have to know which button, what to press. I don't want to answer my call right now and I flip it over. So looking at intuitive ways to manage your phone.
Hi, Scott, this question may apply more to you. You were talking earlier about how the iPhone Safari browser, it's a full functioning browser, and it seems like it would make it very simple now for operators of websites or people thinking of starting websites to really leverage that simplicity of, okay, here's one browser that we can design our sites for the iPhone and almost market their site as being optimized for Safari or for the iPhone and not have to worry about all the other browsers that may be in other PDAs. So I was just curious if you guys thought that maybe this may be the start of a trend, or sites out there may say optimized for iPhone and make it very simple and ride that iPhone buzz and wave that is all in the press right now, just and almost clear out everybody else who has a PDA with a browser in it, because there's so much buzz and name recognition with the iPhone that mm-hmm. it almost makes sense for sites to tie themselves to that buzz and thus making iPhone ubiquitous as everyone's 2-year contracts and they just switch over to iPhone because they know they can go to their favorite sites right. and have the same experience on their phone.
Well, there's so many ways you could kind of attack that. One is, do you just want it to be just an iPhone? I mean, to me, what's exciting about the iPhone is that it's WebKit. And a lot of companies, like the Nokia and so forth, are going with WebKit as well. So I think that in general, iPhone is raising the standard of mobile browsing. So you don't necessarily, I think, have to be only iPhone. You know, I mean, that's a business decision your company's going to have to make. I think it would be very interesting business logic to kind of lock everybody else out, especially if the water's rising and they're all getting better. So that's, I think, what I'm looking forward to is the fact that there will be the HTC browsers and you know, Motorola supporting Opera, which by the new Opera browser is excellent. So as long as they allow me to do Ajax-like things in a way that's fairly consistent, that's, I think, going to be the more, shall we say, safe business place to go. Mm-hmm. But that, by the way, is just the plumbing. I mean, the broader issue is don't just port your site because it's WebKit browser. That's the most important design point of view, is that you still have to redesign it. And that, I think, is a whole other conversation to have.
Thinking just about the user interface and the design patterns, do you guys have any thoughts or comments on how the interface details of the iPhone are actually rubbing off or affecting web apps and desktop apps?
I hadn't thought about that either.
I don't know.
I have a few, but I was just curious if you guys had any thoughts. So I noticed a few desktop apps recently where they've actually implemented the gesture interface and other little details like the icon that shows you have 5 windows open, you know, implementing little things like that I've actually seen carry over on web and desktop apps. So I was wondering if you guys had any thoughts or had seen other examples of that.
Well, I was referring to the VoIP widgets that like Ribbit creates, and I'm anticipating that when we're designing VoIP widgets and integrating those in websites, I think Apple, the iPhone, will be a great model in terms of how they handle the telephone aspect of it. So I can definitely see that will definitely have an influence.
So this will be the last question. We're almost on time. Thanks.
Do you think that with the SDK that will open up a new world for peripherals
as more of a hardware and software platform?
I do believe, definitely. Maybe other input devices, maybe like a full-size keyboard. Maybe some people want that.
Lights, things for cameras.
It could be, people say, you can use the iPhone as a remote control for your entertainment system. Sound speakers, or your stereo, it's a way to connect or to control the stereo. So absolutely, the SDK. I think there's two for peripheral printing. I mean, you think all of them plus new application probably. We haven't thought, but maybe something in the commerce. You go to the store and you can build something or do your shopping list and then go to IKEA and pick up your thing when you come back and you can check out with your iPhone. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thanks very much, and please visit our site to continue the conversation.